Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, an empowering program. No guests, so we have more time for commentaries. Two in-depth commentaries today, actually three. We're going to talk about the view of our history and our exceptionalism and compare that to the reality of what we've actually encouraged, sponsored, or have done, and where this disconnect is. Michael Parenti, Global Research. We're also going to talk today about prescription drugs are quietly killing my generation. An article by Amelia Abraham, and I think it's very important that the younger generation, those in their teens or 20s, take a look, an honest look, at what it means to think that the new normal is having alcohol and prescription medications to create that kind of floating on a cloud sensation, the downside of it. It's a big downside. That'll be an interesting commentary because the average age of the people listening over the internet to this radio program, and this is the most listened to radio program in the world for progressive minds, is 34 years old. It's about equal between men and women. Most of women are college educated. Most listen at night downloading. The average age listening to non-commercial radio in the United States is 70. Watching television, like Fox, 72. And listening over the radio to this program is 56. So the biggest audience, the huge audience, is listening over the internet. That's the future. But a lot of people are just not into that. So we'll talk to that generation that is. Also, we're going to have a discussion today about a person that got into the psychiatric community and the experiences they had. The Malpractice of Psychiatry by Paul Levy, BeyondMeds.com. And this is for the millions of Americans who have found themselves in a psychiatric diagnosis juggernaut. You've been told you have a condition, but you don't. But you're treated as if you have no rights, no freedoms, and if you are, you're just a mental disease, and to be, whether it's given electroconvulsive therapy or chemicals. This is his story, and it's really an awakening. So those two. Then also, I want to share what the true meaning of friendship is. I read an interesting article by Dr. Alex Lichtman in Psychology Today, and I'd like your thoughts on this as well. I'll have plenty of time for talk back near the end of the program where you can call in on any of the issues. Now, we're going to share some insights on poverty. On a regular basis, I want you to see what I've seen in 5 years of traveling, frequently going out for 1 to 3 months at a time, alone on the road, filming for the documentary that is premiering. Right now, by the way, all of our evenings are sold out. I'm sorry, there's no more seats. We've never had this many filled up showings, but that's the way it is. If anyone has made a reservation and is not coming, please call and turn your seat over so someone else who wants to see it can see it. But I'm going to be playing you some insight comments from people about poverty. Then we're going to have someone give us their idea of homelessness. George Carlin on homelessness. Let's begin. Always with health and nutrition. Now, we know from elections around the United States and voting on different referendum that GMOs are being challenged, not just at the state level, but also whole communities are now saying no to GMOs being grown or sold in their communities. And there are dozens and dozens of these communities. This is one reason why the world is waking up to the dangers of GMOs, genetically modified organisms. This is from Natural Society. Quote, GMOs may be to blame for a spike in kids suffering from inflammatory bowel disease. University Hospitals Case Medical Center and Rainbow Babies Children's Hospital, and these are the two largest studies ever conducted, have found a, quote, dramatic increase in inflammatory bowel conditions in children in the United States in the last decade, likely due to eating GMOs. This was published in the Journal of Investigative Medicine. They found a 65% increase in the last 9 years. That's a huge increase in children with these conditions. And it's looking like it's due to eating GMOs. So, one more reason to say no to GMOs in the diet. Go organic. Now, something that can help kids with ADHD is omega-3 fatty acids. That's easy to get. And the best source that really helps the brain the most is not from fish oil. That's been what's gotten the publicity because that's what's gotten the advertising. But the actual biologically most active form of the omega-3 fatty acids comes from flaxseed, from plant sources, walnuts, and other sources. Now, this is from the University of Gothenburg, which, by the way, is in Sweden, and they found that in this major study that children that were given the omega-3 fatty acids that were also diagnosed with ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, had substantial improvement. So, and also there was a separate study that showed that children who had ADHD experienced substantial benefit when they were outside and exercising. Now think of that for a moment. If you have a brain disorder and that is a chemical imbalance, that's what they're claiming it is, how in the world could having a child be outside change your brain chemistry from being inside a classroom? How could a child, let's say, going through normal activities in school, including gym class, be any different than a child outside running around in a grassy field? There could not. It is not scientifically possible. Now, what it tells me is that these are all misdiagnosed. Now, I've said this, and I've written papers on it. I've produced a multi-award-winning document on it that went to the school teachers all over America who watched it and sharing it with their kids, called Drugging of Our Children, that we do not have, we absolutely, positively, unequivocally do not have an epidemic of any brain chemical imbalance in children. It does not exist. First, you cannot have an epidemic happen of a brain chemical imbalance that is genetic. It's not humanly possible. It's not scientifically possible. What we have instead are the following. We have kids who are bored in a classroom where we, when many of the older people in this audience and my generation, baby boomers, we would have recess several times a day. Plus, we would go to lunch. We were always out running, and we were running and playing. That doesn't happen today. There's such an emphasis upon cramming everything in and putting stress upon the students to learn how to take tests. The quality of what they experience as far as learning and how to use that learning to challenge presumptions and assumptions and belief systems is simply non-existent in the traditional and private school environment. Now, there are some schools that do offer curriculum, the Rudolf Steiner schools, Montessori's. There are some private charter schools. There are some that really emphasize a different way of teaching, but by and large, the vast majority don't. They're creating regimented, minded, highly stressed, achievement-oriented students. That is completely disconnected from the purpose of real education. So now imagine that you're a teacher and you're trying to compete with a group of students who may, A, have been up really late at night, no discipline at home, B, on cell phones, which have been shown in over 35 separate scientific studies to adversely affect with electromagnetic pulses the brain, chromosomes, which then can adversely affect the pineal gland, which can adversely affect melatonin, the hormone that we must secrete when we're sleeping to protect our brain and body. It adversely affects the mitochondria, the energy factories. Hence, kids wake up and they're exhausted, which then can lead to poor sleep, overagitated brain, up close to a computer, drinking carbonated beverages high in caffeine, overstimulating and exhausting the adrenal glands, then not wanting to wake up in the morning, getting up, feeling tired, then having to take sugar or caffeine and sugar in order to be stimulated enough to be in class, finding how the class is taught boring, finding the teacher boring, finding the curriculum boring, finding the environment boring, drab, and ugly, and then thinking, where can I go right now that is more exciting? Well, your imagination. And then you're distracted. And then suddenly, you're not paying attention. And that can get you a strike against you to diagnose you with ADHD or ADHD or ADD. We took a group of children 3 years ago. We cleaned up their diet, insisted that the parents give them strict guidelines and enforce it, that the kids had to be in bed, no computers and no cell phones. The kids felt it was terrible. The parents felt very reluctant, but they finally agreed. For those kids that no longer had any caffeine in the diet, no sugars in the diet, no artificial sweetener in the diet, no gluten in the diet, no dairy in the diet, there was just a remarkable transformation. As one medical doctor, a woman physician, said to me, quote, "My kids were bouncing off the walls all the time. We felt that we had three ADHD kids and put them on meds." This is a medical doctor to her own kids. "We believed in vaccinations. I have a kid that has autism. I vaccinated him." Only when we cleaned up their diet, got them off all the highly excitostimulatory agents like sugar, artificial sweeteners, caffeine, did they show a complete change in behavior. And then, of course, there's a lot you can do to rebalance the biochemistry, reestablish a healthy gut bacteria, giving lots of probiotics, methylated B12, methylated folic acid, B-complex, and suddenly the kid is normal again. That had nothing to do with brain chemical imbalance. It had everything to do with the overall milieu and a systemic breakdown of the body systems. All of medicine, 100% of all of medicine, have missed this. They've been wrong, and dangerously so. All of education has missed it. The entire educational community has fallen in lockstep that the kids have ADHD and ADD. They do not. Some may have brain challenges due to multiple environmental sensitivities and what are called triggers. The number one trigger for adverse brain reactions are vaccines and the adjuvants like aluminum, mercury, polysorbate 80, fetal cells, all of which get into a cell of a kid. No two kids are going to act the same, but the fact that you have an epidemic in autism, it has to come from environmental factors. It cannot come from the genes and the triggers and the vaccines and other environmental stimulants, including pesticides, GMOs, all then contribute. Clean up the diet, detoxify the body. It's like starting over. So yes, there are some children who have trouble learning, communicating. But go back and ask what happened just before that. You'll see almost always it was the vaccines. Now let's say you have a kid that didn't have that trouble, that's in school, but now is diagnosed. Go back. What happened? Ask the kid this. Do you fail in all your classes? No. Do you have some teachers you like better than others? Yes. Do you have any teachers that you really like the way they teach and are you excited by the information, you look forward to it? Yes. Do you have some teachers you don't like what's taught? Yeah, I don't like some. Do you get A's in one and F's in the other? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you act out and are hyper when you're at home? No. Can you carry on a normal conversation, have dinner with your family? Yeah. So in other words, you have a brain chemical imbalance. I'm saying this in front of the parents, by the way. So you have a brain chemical imbalance that's unique. It stops bringing a brain chemical imbalance when you're excited by something, when you're interested in something, and when you're around in a non-challenging environment. But the moment you're bored, or you don't like something, or you don't like someone, suddenly your brain chemical imbalance suddenly starts all over again. That's amazing. That's the first time in history this has ever happened. You're a unique anomaly. The trouble is you're not. There's 10 million other kids just like you. When you have the school teachers working against your interest, and the doctors, the medical community, and psychiatry, and families conditioned to believe all the authority figures, then what do you have going for you? Who's on your side? Think about that. So now, the next time you read an article about how kids do better outside who have ADHD, yeah, and why? You haven't suggested they don't have real ADHD. You're just saying, well, let them outside as part of a therapy. But if someone said, give them this drug, you'd say, yeah, give them a drug and get them outside. Man, do we have such a completely lack of legitimate science and thinking in all of our societies, in all of our institutions, and I exclude none. When you get to the point where you have to grovel to appease those in power by pathologizing normal life, the problem is not the institution. The problem is the people that grovel. Traumatic stress may affect your DNA. Okay, this is from Medical News Today, from Psychotherapy and Psychosomatics. Quote, for the first time, demonstrates that traumatic stress may induce DNA breakage, but psychotherapy may help heal it. Previous research revealed an association between traumatic stress and an increased risk of numerous diseases, including cancer. At the molecular level, stress may increase carcinogenesis via increased DNA damage and impair DNA repair mechanisms. The authors assessed DNA breakage in peripheral blood mononuclear cells from individuals with post-traumatic stress disorder, and measured the cellular capacity to repair single-strand breaks after exposure to ionizing radiation. They also investigated the effects of psychotherapy on both DNA breakage and DNA repair. So here's the takeaway message. By the way, this is not by any measure the first. In fact, I'm going to challenge and call out Medical News Today, which normally publishes some cutting-edge and interesting material. I would suggest that you do this. Go back and look at the work of the great founder of this entire field, and that is Dr. Hans Selye. Then read the work of Dr. Lawrence Leshand, then Dr. Larry Kessler. I knew all three. I work for a time with Lawrence Leshand, and I work with Gerald Kessler, who was the former chief of psychiatry at the City of New York at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was doing my psi research. They all knew that you could produce disease of different types depending upon the trauma that you had suffered earlier in life. Now, there are thousands of studies in the journals, all good independent science, all imperial journals on psychoneuroimmunology, meaning psycho, your brain, your emotions, neuro, your neurological system, and immunology, meaning your immune system. So when you think a positive thought, you create a positive biochemistry. You think a negative thought, you create a negative biochemistry. You think a depression thought, negative biochemistry. Anxious thought, negative biochemistry. Stress thought, negative biochemistry. Fear, negative biochemistry. Rage, negative biochemistry. Anger, negative biochemistry. So we're all going to have those emotions at different times for different reasons, many of them legitimate reasons. That is not what hurts us. What hurts us is not episodic emotions, it is chronic emotions. Chronic becomes systemic, where we simply wake up each day with an attitude. And when we then have that attitude, we seek out people, articles, movements that reinforce the rightness of that emotion. Have you ever noticed how negative people seek out other negative people to justify their negativity? And positive people are always better around positive people because it reinforces the joy of being positive. So yeah, if you were growing up and you didn't have the childhood you deserved and should have had, it's completely understandable how today you're suffering at the DNA level, not just from the memory of what happened, locked in your subconscious and the epigenetics of subconscious biochemistry, but the actual DNA has been altered. Hence, you're more susceptible to cancer, breast cancer, brain cancers, heart disease, because of the trauma from early in life. And what it's saying is that psychotherapy helps. I agree with that. But what is psychotherapy? Psychotherapy is not a real science. Instead, it is the capacity of people who are both compassionate, sensitive to the issue, and from my perspective, many have come out of the Albert Ellis School, including the great Donald Mullins, who was a good friend of mine for decades till he passed, that be humanistic, holistic, and be non-judgmental. You have a person that's come to you because they're in crisis. Instead of judging them for the crisis they're in, help look for a way out of it. And through that compassionate way of listening, befriending, and trying to help guide a person to a better place, that's been done throughout history. In fact, you could say that almost every elder, every wise man and woman throughout history has been a psychotherapist. Your rabbi, the psychotherapist. In my hometown, there was a priest. And I don't care what your religion, you went to this priest. Why? Because, first, he never identified himself when he was talking with you and playing basketball with you and boxing with you. And he was a tough athlete. I mean, he was in there weightlifting, basketball. He was a phenomenal role model as a human being. The fact that he was a priest was really a secondary issue. Everyone I know who was going through issues in life would quietly, privately go to see him, and he would treat you like a human being, not as if you had sinned. He wasn't defending the stupidity of doctrine and dogma. Instead, he was helping you through the crisis as a human being. That's why everyone loved this guy. And that's what we've had in all the villages and towns and communities throughout all of history. The person who cared enough about you to sit and patiently listen to you and try to understand your problem from your perspective and then try to give you an idea of some other alternative ways of looking at it and dealing with it from their perspective. And that's why we love the quotes, the great quotes from Gandhi and Buddha and Maimonides and Montaigne, Voltaire. We love their quotes because through their quotes, we're seeing a different perspective, that we're seeing our problem through their solution. And hence, we no longer are limited to just embracing our problem. We can surrender it. So yeah, I agree. Psychotherapy can help a lot of people and has. Psychiatry helps no one. It's a problem. I'm going to get to that now. But before I get to that and give you the story of a person who was involved in that, I want to share this with you. Because when you hear about where America's going, and a lot of people are discouraged, a lot of people no longer trust the elected officials, unfortunately, not enough. The fact that people continue to vote for Democrat or Republicans instead of truly independent and hence non-owned citizens that would go to work for us shows you we still have a lot of people who are part of the problem, not the solution. But in all cases, we keep hearing how it's going to be better. It'll be better if Hillary Clinton's president. You think? Well, I'll deal with that and all that has gone on in the past that somehow no one wants to look at. But then we keep hearing about how we're exceptional. And I'm thinking, what part of exceptional are you leaving out? Absolutely, we have been exceptional and are exceptional. They're exceptional people. They're exceptional sacrifices. There's exceptional good. When a 90-year-old man and two ministers are arrested yesterday in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, for feeding 300 homeless people in an orderly and good manner, and the police come in heavy-handed and to arrest a 90-year-old man who was helping to serve food to people who had no food. The police didn't give a damn. The police don't give a damn, except those who choose to challenge it. But when did you see a march of the good police against the bad police? When did you see a demonstration of all the good police in America say, let us join together and say we will not be militarized? We will not, you know, shoot and taser people simply because we have an opportunity to. Unless we feel truly threatened, we will deal with issues as historically the police did, in a way that was both civilized and frequently very caring and compassionate. Until I see that demonstration, until I see the people, the police turning in those who are rapists, and there were three just yesterday that were caught in rapes, the police, and those that have killed innocent people. One American every day of the year, one American unarmed dies because police kill him when that stops. And if you live in New Mexico, you really are at high risk of getting killed by police out there. They kill more people per population than any other police department in the United States, including Chicago. And they always get away with it. They always get away with this, unless somehow it was accidentally caught and got in the system or intentionally filmed, and then they might be challenged. More often than not, they're not. So when I see all the good police stand up and say, we will not do the following because it's against the Constitution, we will not desecrate the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, good for you. Then I support what you're doing. We will not hide the crimes and misdemeanors of our colleagues. Good for you. If every doctor and nurse did the same thing, we wouldn't have iatrogenic death as the number one cause of death in America, medically induced. In fact, last night on my radio show, I had an interesting conversation where I was there to defend a woman who's Michelle Ryder, a registered nurse, whose child was taken away from her. Based upon her statements, the child had undergone extensive surgery. There was complication in surgery. My idea was it probably cut some nerves. And the kid was in 24/7 excruciating pain. And with all the drugs they were giving him, the kid couldn't come out of pain. So the kid was put in intensive care for 30 days and still couldn't get out of the pain. But also not just that, but the kid was having seizures and the legs were flopping. And this was filmed. Then the mother, the nurse, went to the head of the medical team and said, I'd like to have a second opinion. For that statement of wanting the kid to have a second opinion to see if there wasn't something else that could help him, her kid was taken away from her. She was charged with child abuse and hadn't been able to see her kid in months. So we wanted to find out why. Interesting. I will leave it for you to listen to the rest of it. It's called The Rise of Medical Kidnapping, which is an epidemic right now. If you refuse to vaccinate your kid because you have good reason to, your kid could be taken away from you. If you refuse a standard medical treatment like chemotherapy, even though it's been shown not to help your particular kid's cancer, your kid can be taken away from you and is, and a lot of other reasons. In any case, there was a point in the conversation where I asked her a simple question. Have you ever witnessed doctors and nurses making mistakes in hospitals? She said, yes. Is it common? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do they cover up for one another? Silence. Do they not report on each other? Wouldn't answer it. Of course, the answer is, I said it's either yes or no. Now, if the answer was yes, then the question is, if you saw this, were you one of the people that didn't report it? So I can understand her reluctance. Could you imagine what would happen if all the doctors and all the nurses in the United States, when they saw something that was wrong, they reported it instead of covering it up? Could you imagine the difference in the outcome? How many lives would be saved? How many people's living with problems that were created by mistakes would be addressed and compensated and corrected? So the normality is that we don't have movements to correct these gross imbalances in truth and mistakes in our society. So let's just take a look. Through much of history, the abnormal, which we now consider normal. Now, this is not meant as a challenge. It's merely to show the paradox to which we should attend. Aberrations, so plentiful as to form a terrible normality of their own. The number of massacres in history, for instance, are almost more than we could record. There was the New World Holocaust, consisting of the extermination of indigenous Native American peoples throughout the Western Hemisphere, extending over 400 years or more, continuing right up until the current regime in the Amazon region. There were these centuries of heartless slavery in the Americas and elsewhere, with at least 11 to 12 million who were brought into slavery, and almost 2 million of them died in the Middle Passages coming across the ocean, followed by a full century of lynch mob rule and Jim Crow segregation in the United States, and today the numerous killings and incarcerations of black youth by law enforcement agencies. Let us not forget the extermination of 200,000 Filipinos by the U.S. military at the beginning of the 20th century, the genocidal massacre of 1.5 million Armenians by the Turks in 1915, the mass killings of African peoples by the Western colonists, including 63,000 victims in German Southwest Africa in 1904, the brutalization and enslavement of millions in the Belgian Congo from the late 1880s until emancipation in 1960, followed by years of neocolonial free market exploitation and the repression in what was Mobutu Zaire. French colonizers killed over 150,000 Algerians. Later on, several million souls perished in Angola and Mozambique, along with an estimated 5 million in the merciless region now known as the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The 20th century gave us, among other horrors, more than 16 million lost and 20 million wounded or mutilated in World War I, followed by an estimated 62 million to 78 million killed in World War II, including 24 million Soviet military personnel and civilians, 5.8 million European Jews, and taken together, several million Serbs, Poles, Roma, homosexuals, and a score of other nationalities, all slaughtered. In the decades after World War II, many, if not most, massacres and wars have been openly or covertly sponsored by the exceptionalism of the U.S. foreign policy, our national security state. This includes the 2 million or so left dead or missing in Vietnam, along with 250,000 Cambodians. Thank you, Henry Kissinger, for that. 100,000 the Laotians, that also was Kissinger, and 58,000 Americans. That does not include the injured, just the dead. And today, much of Africa, Central Asia, and the Middle East, there are smaller wars replete with atrocities of all sorts. Central Africa, Central America, Colombia, Rwanda, too numerous to mention, suffered the massacres and death squad exterminations of hundreds of thousands, a constancy of violent horrors. In Mexico, the war on drugs, which America supported and is supporting, 20,000 missing, 70,000 dead. Well, that's some victory on your war on drugs there. President Bush, Clinton, Obama, Reagan. Yeah. Only 90,000 victims that we know of in Mexico alone. Was it worth it? Oh, to a bureaucrat, a technocrat, an oligarch, it's always worth it. There was the slaughter of more than 500,000 socialists and democratic nationalists in Indonesia by the U.S.-supported, funded, and armed Indonesian military in 1965, eventually followed by the extermination of over 100,000 East Timorese by that same U.S.-backed military. Again, Gerald Ford, Henry Kissinger. Consider the 78 days of NATO aerial destruction of Yugoslavia, complete with depleted uranium, and the bombings and invasion of Panama, Grenada, Somalia, Libya, Yemen, Western Pakistan, Afghanistan, and now the devastation of the war of attrition brokered against Syria, the U.S.-sponsored sanctions against Iran, and above that also you have the incomplete listing of the world's violent and ugly injustice. A comprehensive inventory is too much for me to mention now, but we could add in Syria, Haiti, South Sudan, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Mali. Think of the millions of women and children around the world and across the centuries who have been trafficked in unspeakable ways, and the millions upon millions trapped in exploitive toil, be they slaves, indentured servants, or underpaid laborers. For all the billionaires, multimillionaires, for all the top athletes and celebrities, I really exclude celebrities because I want someone to at least have an understanding of the problems that they are participating in when they go to Dubai and Abu Dhabi and not realizing, how do you think all that was built? Don't look at the grandeur, which is accepted, of the magnificent edifices of architectural design. Yes, beautiful buildings. Who built them? Who? Slaves. slaves. Every single brick, every single mortar, every single everything. And shame on New York University. Well, there's no shame there. They will exploit anything at any time and then lie about it. But ask about how their campus over there was built. And they had no knowledge of it. Well, if you don't have that kind of knowledge, how can you possibly teach any class in your university on social consciousness? Everything that's magnificent around these countries, and Shanghai was built, and Macau, all built slave labor. And let's not overlook the ubiquitous corporate corruption, the massive financial swindles, the plundering of natural resources, the industrial poisoning of whole regions, the forceful dislocation of entire populations, the continuing catastrophes of Chernobyl and Fukushima, impending disasters awaiting numerous aging nuclear reactors, the world's dreadful aberration, are so commonplace and unrelenting that they lose their edge and we become inured to the horror of it all. Who today remembers the Iraqis and the deaths and destruction done to them on a grand scale by the U.S. invasion of their lands? Now, William Blum reminds us that more than half the Iraq population is either dead, wounded, traumatized, imprisoned, displaced, or exiled, while their environment is 100% saturated with depleted uranium from U.S. weapons, inflicting horrific birth defects. What is to be made of all this? First, we must not ascribe these aberrations to happenstance, innocent confusion, and unintended consequences. This was all intended. Nor should we believe the usual rationales from the MSNBC and others about spreading democracy, fighting terrorism, providing humanitarian rescue, protecting U.S. national interests, and other such rallying cries promulgated by ruling elites and their mouthpieces. The repetitious pattern of atrocities and violence are so persistent as to invite the suspension of any honest thought. These are structural, not incidental. All this destruction and slaughter has greatly profited the plutocrats who pursue economic expansion, resource acquisition, territorial domination, and financial accumulation. Ruling interests are well served by their superiority in firepower and striking force. Violence is what we are talking about here, not just the wild and wanton type, but the persistent, well-organized type. As it has been told to us, we simply need to understand that the world is a better place because we are in control of it. Michael Parenti, Global Research. Really? I know a lot of people who think they're very smart, the best and the brightest of our generations. I feel that they're all deluded sociopaths. And I make no exception. All. Every major institution, every major paradigm, sociopaths controlled by psychopaths and supported by technocrats who control bureaucrats. And all the while, people say, wow, yeah, we are exceptional. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to talk about several other things. We're going to hear from George Carlin in a moment about how to deal with homelessness, and I'm going to give you some insight on homelessness from a very important new documentary. By the way, I want to thank, I was just told we had three two for the 7 o'clock showing on opening night and one for the 9 o'clock showing who said they wouldn't be coming, so they turned in their seats. This is also a fundraiser for our sister station, New York City, WBAI. So, if you'd like to join me on December 5th at 7 o'clock for the world premiere of my new feature film, Poverty Inc., and there'll be a film right after that at 9:30. I'll be at both for a question and answer and panel. Give a call. The call number is 646-926-5422. I only have two seats for one and one seat for the last showing. All other showings right now are full. 646-926-5422. Now, this will be your last opportunity today to call in if you want to join the Brain Health Support Group, which begins this Sunday. Last night, we had two groups. We were packed. We had one man get up. He was with his wife, and he said, when I asked at the beginning of the class, how are you doing? What has changed? This man said, can you believe this? My wife's blood, fasting blood sugar level was 700. It's now 85. Wow. The doctors couldn't do it. The hospital she was in couldn't do it. And in 8 weeks, that's where blood sugar is. And people have lost 40 pounds. The blood pressure's normalizing. Blood sugar's normalizing. Weight's coming off. Clarity of thought. So I'm very, very pleased by what we're seeing by these people. And I give them the credit because they're the ones who have to make the sacrifices, make the changes, and they're doing it. And this is an actual clinical scientific study, so when the results are all in another 6 weeks, we will submit it for publication in a peer-reviewed journal, and I'll have the people on the air. So you can call if you want to be a part of that, but I'll have Luann on in a moment to tell you where to call. Let's say hello to our program director here, Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hey, good afternoon, Gary. How are you?
Good. Now, we post every day. Dozens and dozens, sometimes hundreds of pieces. I like to post the ones about famous quotes because I believe it inspires us. Beautiful scenes of nature because it motivates us. And videos and photos of animals that remind us of how much love they give us and what responsibility we have to not forget that we shouldn't be harming, abusing, or neglecting these wonderful creatures. So it's a good way for people to start the day. But then the hard-hitting articles on progressive themes are done by Danny Schechter and Misha Kaku and Stephen
Harvey
Ledman.
Wasserman, yeah.
Harvey Wasserman and of course, Richard Gale. And so how many people are coming to see what we've got and sharing it?
So just with Facebook, because you're doing all those...
Just Facebook.
We have, just last month, in October, we had 11,544,772 posts which were reached. That means people liking, people going to it, people sharing with other fans.
So that's great.
So we appreciate everyone who's doing that. And then plus people calling in who aren't on the computer, just calling in. We have, over since the course of, we started 14,500,000 minutes, which is number one in America and number two in the world.
So wow. So for those of you who call in because you're traveling or you're out and you want to listen to the show, 14 million minutes, number one in America. Of all the 4,000 radio stations, we're number one. Let me give you that number. Keep it, 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Gary.
By the way, just think about it. If we had 11 million people come over to the Facebook page and they're sharing the information, imagine how many other people then by
exponential
expression are going to end up becoming exposed to that.
All right, I just want to thank Aaron because the more we put up stuff, whether it's pictures, hard-hitting articles, they are sharing it, they are helping out, and it's
that's
great because
great.
It's starting a great community, and we started
well,
here.
That's what we're saying. We're
exactly.
Bringing progressive-minded people together to share. It's the we, not me. That's the future.
That's
Thank
what
you,
it's
Jason.
For. That's what it's for, exactly.
So look at what we're putting up there. It's there for you. And it's all free. It's there as a public service. And it's not Democrat. And it's not Republican. And it's not these political or economic agendas or religious agendas. It's just quality information. Now, we're going to hear right now what George Carlin thinks of homelessness. Then I'm going to give you... And we won't go through all of it. It's a little too long, but enough to get the message.
I got just the place for low-cost housing. I have solved this problem. I know where we can build housing for the homeless. Golf courses. Perfect. Golf courses. Just what we need. Plenty of good land in nice neighborhoods, land that is currently being wasted on a meaningless, mindless activity engaged in primarily by white, well-to-do male businessmen who use the game to get together to make deals to carve this country up a little finer among themselves. I am getting tired. Really tired. I am getting tired of these golfing suckers in their green pants and their yellow pants and their orange pants and their precious little hats and their cute little golf carts. It is time to reclaim the golf courses from the wealthy and turn them over to the homeless. Golf is an arrogant, elitist game, and it takes up entirely too much f***ing room in this country. Too much f***ing room in this country. It is an arrogant game on its very design alone. Just the design of the game speaks of arrogance. Think of how big a golf course is. The ball is that f***ing big. What do these pinheaded pricks need with all that land? There are over 17,000 golf courses in America. They average over 150 acres apiece. That's over 3 million acres. That's 4,820 square miles. You could build two Rhode Islands and a Delaware for the homeless on the land currently devoted to this meaningless, mindless, arrogant, elitist, racist. Racist. There's another thing. The only blacks you'll find in country clubs are carrying trays and a boring game. For boring people. Do you ever watch golf on television? It's like watching flies f- and a mindless game. Mindless. Think of the intellect. Think of the intellect it must take to draw pleasure from this activity. Hitting a ball with a crooked stick and then walking after it. And then hitting it again. I say, pick it up, asshole. You're lucky you found the f***ing thing. Put it in your pocket and go the f*** home. Go the f*** home. You're a winner. No. No chance of that happening. Dorko in the plaid knickers is going to hit it again and walk some more. Let these rich suckers play miniature golf. Let them f*** with a windmill for an hour and a half or so. See if there's any real skill among them. Now, I know there are some people who play golf who don't consider themselves rich. F*** them. And shame on them for engaging in an arrogant, elitist pastime. Hey, here's another place we could put some low-cost housing. Cemeteries. There's another idea whose time has passed. Saving all the dead people in one part of town? What the hell kind of a superstitious, religious, medieval bullshit idea is that? Plow these motherfuckers up. Plow them into the streams and rivers of America. We need that phosphorus for farming. If we're going to recycle, let's get serious.
Well, wow. That was George Carlin's idea of how to help the homeless. Well, George, you certainly have some unusual ideas. We have a real serious film on this and on Poverty Inc., and we're looking forward just a month to premiering. Now, we have Luann Panessi on the phone. And hi, Luann. How are you today?
Hello, Gary. So,
here's what we're going to do. Let me also mention, to help our sister station, WBAI, we're going to be doing a single retreat to help the station the second week of January, one of our wonderful annual, we do this once a year, a health retreat where we go to an exotic location, very warm, wonderful beaches, and we do yoga, meditation, juicing. We do lectures, workshops, Tai Chi. We do cooking classes and deep meditation. You do counseling. I do lectures. We have, this year I'm calling Sham Bhatnagar to see about him doing his breathing workshops that Sham has done at these over the long times. And if he's available, I'm sure he'll be there. We also have specialized training, power walking, biking, water aerobics, lots of healthy mineral water, wonderful gourmet vegan cooking classes, and a great way to start the new year. Starts the second Sunday in January. It's 2 weeks this year, but a person can come if they can only stay 1 week for 1 week. It's a good way to detox starting the new year with new resolutions and having the input and the positive energy to stick with it. So that's it for the year. That's the one we're doing. So if people want to join us, and it is a fundraiser, money will go directly to WBI. And by the way, we just sent a nice check yesterday to BAI for the premiere of the movie to help them out. So they're getting checks from us, and that will help them pay their bills. And the people do get their premiums. These premiums, they're guaranteed to get. There won't be any delay or not getting them. These, if they pay, they come, period. So, Luann, give them your number because you're the one who's handling this.
Yes, I'm at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. I interview everybody. We only want happy, upbeat people who are very excited about taking a nice break after the holidays.
Okay, give that number one more time, please.
Surely, 631-504-6198. And I'm also still interviewing people for our Brain Health Support Group that starts this Sunday.
Great. Now, thank you very much, Luann. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to ask our affiliate stations, because we have to do this little fundraising pitch for WBAI to help it out. It's going in an extra week, and we understand that we need to raise money for the station for it to pay its bills. But because it breaks some of the time for all the other stations that are carried, I'm going to run a little long today. So just giving a heads up, for all the other stations, we're going to run a little long so you get everything I talked about. This is from Amelia Abraham from Vice. The article is entitled, "Prescription Drugs Are Quietly Killing My Generation." I'll quote, "Prescription drugs are easy to get a hold of, whether they come from a doctor or not. The other week, I bought 3 Valium for my flatmate. I used one to catch up on sleep and gave the other 2 to a friend who likes to mix them with alcohol. She practically fell asleep standing up. It was only then that I thought about how I probably shouldn't be buying prescription medication and doling it out. But because Valium is technically legal, and because I was 4 drinks down at that free bar when I gave them to her, I didn't really register it at the time. Drugs like these, the painkiller tramadol, psychoactive benzodiazepines such as Xanax and Valium, or anti-epilepsy drugs like Lyrica, make you feel like you're floating on a cloud. They come with lower penalties than illegal drugs if you're caught buying or selling them. No penalties for possession, and are generally cheaper. This is their appeal and also their danger. In Britain last year, 220 registered deaths were attributed to tramadol, almost 250% higher than 5 years ago. And more people are dying now, 342 deaths, from benzodiazepines like Valium. In America, the problem is far worse. Over the last year, 1 in 9 young people, let me repeat that, 1 in 9 young people took prescription drugs non-medically, and over 2,500 young Americans abused prescription drugs for the first time every 24 hours. These kinds of statistics, along with the high-profile celebrity deaths like Michael Jackson, mean that we often think of prescription drugs abuse as an American problem. It's not. Last month, a British couple in their 20s were found dead in a hotel room in Agra, India, due to an overdose of a cocktail of prescription drugs that included sleeping pills, antidepressants, and cough medicine. The man was a 27-year-old teacher named James Gaskell, who spent the previous weeks posting tweets about all the prescription drugs available to him over the counter and under the counter. Quote, "One prescription in India will take you far away. Codeine, under the counter here, with Valium, Xanax, and Lyrica winning." The couple's overdose of these substances didn't surprise me, nor did James' tweets about how readily available the prescription drugs were to him overseas. In England, the main kind of addictive drug available over the counter is codeine. as well as some kinds of cough medicine. Other countries, however, particularly those in Asia and Central America, have less stringent policies. I first went to India when I was 19. I bought packs of Valium from a chemist just because I could. I was young and probably quite enamored by the idea of getting high off something that I could buy in a shop. I'd like to say that I have grown up since then, but it's not true. I did the same thing when I went to Cambodia at 22. I walked into a pharmacy and bought two packs of Valium in 5 milligram and 10 milligram doses. And that's how it works. In Cambodia, for example, I met all kinds of young British travelers and expats who were taking a regular cocktail of pharmaceuticals with alcohol. The most common was Xanax, Valium, and Tramadol. But also I saw ketamine, morphine, and Oxycontin. Quote, "You can get this stuff from any pharmacy," said one of the individuals. "But there is also a danger, as the Gaskell's death proved." Quote, "There's such a huge drug culture at universities that when graduates come here, they think they are invincible. People are traveling to experiment. I know people who have shot ketamine or who have anally inserted tramadol. It's scary, the amount of drug overdoses in the young travelers. If someone dies in your hostel, you have to pay a huge amount of money to the police. So what often happens is that bodies are chucked out and later discovered. These overseas deaths are alarming, but what is also alarming is the fact that you can bring the drugs back and continue to party. Technically, Valium, Xanax, and Tramadol are controlled under the Misuse of Drugs Act of 1971 as Class C substances. And ex-dealer Dan tells me that because Valium has a relatively low street value, it's not the most popular one anymore. Valium and Tramadol don't necessarily need to be bought from a dealer. Easy to get everywhere. And then this person says, "What's ironic, though, is that when you abuse drugs like Valium, their medical effects are put in reverse, a bit like how I occasionally take prescription painkillers before I go to sleep, but I wake up with a banging headache." And the benzodiazepines are often introduced to help people cope with anxiety, but people build up a tolerance, take more and more, and then tend to get far worse cases of anxiety when they try to come off the drugs. After coming off Valium, one of my friends said, quote, "I felt psychotically paranoid, thought everyone knew something that they didn't." Likewise, another friend admits that he never actually had anxiety in the past, but developed anxiety as a result of the drug abuse. In conclusion, the idea of approaching a friend who you think or know has a problem with prescription drugs is going to be scary. You're probably not going to get a friendly response, but you'll feel better that you said something, because there's no way of dressing it up. Drugs like Valium can and do ruin people's lives. Looking back, one of my friends says it changed him, that he was no longer himself. That, to me, seems like the paradox at the heart of the drug abuse. We take drugs to alter our natural state, and then we wind up not liking the new person we become. And Barton, my friend, said, "A general social unease whereby we feel we have to do something chemical to our bodies in order to relax, enjoy life, celebrate, and commiserate." A complex question resounded. What the hell is so wrong with us that we have to spend so much time changing the way we feel? But a suggestion struck me as simple. Perhaps we could try it. Life without the drugs. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. I want to thank you for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. And we will deal with the other issues, including the malpractice of psychiatry by Paul Levy from BeyondMeds.com, a horrifying story of what happens when a normal person shares a thought with a psychiatrist and finds themselves institutionalized and medicated. Have a nice day, everyone. Let's say hello to down hidden somewhere beneath the Everglades, Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. It does feel like that today. We're talking about a mayoral recall issue in Benton Harbor, Michigan, that has claimed an activist battling corporate land grabs in Benton Harbor. And we'll be talking about the day after the duopoly settled their scores. Where do we go from here? The continuing question.
You Utrecht lead right now.
I feel